You're listening to Morning Edition on KASU. I'm News Director Jonathan Reeves. Good morning. It's 8:21. Joining us on the phone lines right now with our monthly congressional delegation conversation is U.S. Representative Rick Crawford. Mr. Crawford, good morning. Thanks for joining us, as always.
Hey, appreciate it. Good to be with you.
Yeah, over the weekend, as you know, we had over 1,000 cases of COVID-19 in a 24-hour period. That was from Friday to Saturday, Saturday to Sunday, over 500. You know, it seems like Arkansas is seeing these increases and spikes. I want to get your thoughts on Arkansas's response and the governor's response to this. Do you think that the state is doing enough to be able to combat COVID-19 at this time?
Well, I think so. I think that, it's interesting, the way these numbers can be and oftentimes are presented and not necessarily always in context. And so while we might see an increase in the numbers, it makes sense that we see an increase in the numbers as we see an increase in testing. When this was a new phenomenon, thinking back to February and March, and we were, kind of caught off guard with this new virus, we didn't have the capacity to test at that point in time. We didn't really know as much about it as we do now. But certainly now we have an increased capacity to test, and so we're seeing an increase in positives as a result. And that's largely attributed to, the amount of testing that's taking place. And at the same time, we're not seeing a whole lot of reports on the number of negatives. And also, we're not hearing a whole heck of a lot about, some of the outcomes with regard to recovery. I mean, this is about a 99% recovery rate. And so we have a tendency to sort of gravitate toward the negative without necessarily paying much attention to what's going on with regard to positives. And I don't mean positive tests, I mean positive news. And that is that, we've seen a sharp decline in the number of people on ventilators. We've seen a sharp decline in the number of hospitalizations. We know that early on, the virus was predominantly taking a toll in nursing homes. We're seeing now that the nursing home numbers are not nearly as bad as they were initially. So there's a lot of good things we can point to. We don't necessarily have to focus on just bad. But, unfortunately, that's just what we get is a steady report of here's the number of positives. And while it's increasing, we're not looking at the number of the decline in hospitalizations, the decline in the number of deaths, and the decline in or the increase in the recoveries. And so I think you could, there's always going to be numbers out there to support people's perspectives and so on. But I think we should put this information in full context and see that there are a lot of positive numbers that could be reported as well that just seem to be glossed over.
Well, with all due respect, in Arkansas, we actually have been seeing an increase in hospitalizations, and we've been seeing a slow increase in the death rate. And that I think that's where some people are really concerned about, that the healthcare industry could really be overwhelmed by this, as we're seeing an increase in the hospitalizations, and especially with the fall coming. How would you respond to that?
Well, I think what you're seeing is, from a national perspective, I think, you look at states like New York, look at states like Florida and so on. New York has, ridiculous numbers, ridiculously high. And in contrast, look at Texas, which has a 10 million population higher than New York, and they're a fraction of what's taking place in New York. And so I think when you boil this down into national numbers, those are the kinds of things that you see in a different response in different states. In Arkansas, I think our response has been considerably better than places like New York and others, New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, other states across the country. And I think we're probably below, on a national average, I think we're probably below the national average on hospitalizations. I don't think we're in a position where we're going to start to, and the other thing is we're not talking about the number of people on ventilators. You haven't heard very much talk about ventilators at all in the last couple of months. And so the way that they're treating positive cases is different. You know, you may point to an increase in hospitalizations, but you know, think about the increase in positives. I mean, again, we're talking about a 99% recovery rate, and you know, so there's definitely a possibility that people are still going to be admitted to the hospital as a you know part of the protocol for treatment, but I just don't see that being to the point that we should be worried about our capacity to provide care to folks that have tested positive for COVID-19.
U.S. Representative Rick Crawford joining us here on Morning Edition here on KASU. One thing I was wanting to ask you about is I know that you have school children that are in school. I have a child who's in school as well. Are you concerned about COVID-19 in the school year that's coming up and how schools may have to respond to COVID-19 if you have outbreaks in the schools, if you know what I'm trying to ask, please?
Sure. I mean, we should be concerned about any kind of disease outbreak that has potential to occur in a school setting. We should have been concerned about it years ago. We should be concerned about it now, not just COVID-19, but other things. There are a variety of different diseases that are that can take place in a school setting. And I mean, it's not uncommon to see flu shut down an entire school in the course of a year where you might have, you know, a day or two or three or longer even where a school is effectively shut down because of, you know, a traditional flu virus. And so, you know, we hear this all the time that schools and daycares are petri dishes for those types of outbreaks potentially. And so I think that's something that we should always be concerned about as just as a matter of course. But I think it's also really easy to get sort of, I think, focused on some negatives here that are we really going to deny our children education because we're worried about COVID-19 when we've seen worse numbers in flu, in traditional strains of flu, where we've seen that be much more prevalent and much more common in schools. And so I don't think parents, and also think about the economic toll this is going to take. I don't think parents want to stay home and homeschool their kids when we're perfectly capable of opening schools. And if it means, and I've said this before, I'm not a big fan of masks, but if that's what it takes to make people comfortable, to get our economy back up and running and to get kids in school, you know, a small price to pay if that's what it takes to make people comfortable. But the reality is our kids are not only, it's not even about education as much as it is about socialization throughout their life. I mean, a lot of kids are being denied, you know, my kids miss their friends, and I'm sure yours do too, and their inability to have been able to spend time with them, not just over the summer, which typically happens anyway, where you don't spend as much time with your friends as you would ordinarily in a school setting, but I'm talking about when they shut down the schools back in the spring. I think we're getting to a point now with our kids where depression can set in here and create much more damage. Again, this gets back to what we've said before about the cure is worse than the disease. And I think you have to be thinking about the state of mind of kids and their desire to be with their friends and to socialize as part of their educational process, not just the, you know, reading, writing, and arithmetic, but also the socialization that takes place in school and the extracurricular activities as we talk about trying to make young people into well-rounded, well-adjusted citizens, and we're denying them one of the key elements of how they achieve that. And so I think, yes, we got to be careful, and if it, you know, if folks say, you know, make them wear a mask. Okay, I mean, whatever it takes, I think we just need to really be thinking about what the long-term damage that we're doing to kids by keeping them out of school. And that's one of my biggest concerns.
Yeah, there's been a push for a mask ordinance or a mask mandate in Jonesboro and in many other cities in Arkansas. What are your thoughts on a mask mandate?
Well, like I said, I mean, if that's what people want to do. And if they feel like, you know, somehow they feel better if they see people in masks, I'm a rule follower. I'm going to follow the rules. I think there are probably businesses, you know, they have signs on the door, please wear a mask when you come in. If that's a condition of doing business there, then I'm going to put a mask on before I go in. So, you know, again, people are going to make the decisions that they want to make. What I will say is that I do feel like that decision is best left to, you know, local government rather than having the federal government issue a mandate. But then we're going to get into an issue. We've got a lot of more pressing issues in terms of law enforcement to worry about than having police pull people over or cite them because they're not wearing their mask. And then also, are we going to start citing people for wearing their mask improperly? I can't tell you the number of times I go into a store and I see people with a mask hanging off their ear or down under their nose or even under their mouth, just strapped under their chin. And so in many cases, they're wearing the mask simply because you say wear the mask, but not wearing it to have any kind of an effect. And so, you know, are we going to now tell our police officers, go write those folks in tickets because they're in violation of a city ordinance? Meanwhile, you know, we've got crime going on over here and over there that our police officers will be better directed to them as opposed to people that are either not wearing or miswearing a mask. And so whatever the city council decides, that's fine. That's why they're there. They're elected representatives, and they'll make that decision. But again, I think we could probably direct those resources more efficiently. I don't want to see police, you know, out there writing tickets for folks that are either not wearing a mask or wearing it improperly.
I want to ask you about police real fast, and I want to ask you about with the move to be able to defund police departments or the move to be able to kind of talk about policing and that, your thoughts on that and how should, you know, Congress and legislation and all that, I mean, what's the path forward in being able to address these issues?
Well, I mean, how much time do you have, Jonathan? Here's the thing. I do not support defund the police. I'm all in to defend the police. They defend us on a daily basis. Can the police department do things differently? Can they do things better? Sure, we all can. That's a fact. But defunding the police will not accomplish that goal. What we need, if anything, is to increase funding to police so they get better training and they can have, you know, not just an 8-hour class on this and then hit the streets, but, you know, a recurring in-service type scenarios where they're being, you know, sort of refresher training as they need it, new techniques and tactics and practices that are taking place in law enforcement, and maintain a level of training and readiness throughout their career, not just in response to, you know, certain incidents, but an ongoing training that takes place to make sure that police officers are better equipped and better trained to address, to address any kind of scenario that might come up. So I am not for any kind of defunding of police. In fact, I would like to see more resources go to more ongoing training. And so, you know, we can talk about this all day, but I think that is a huge mistake to vilify police. One of the things I want to point out to you, there was a story in the news recently where there was a protest taking place. And a woman had her child, you know, protesting the police, and the child began to choke on something. And the child, the woman immediately runs to the police, and the police officer, without question, saves this child from choking. You see the irony in this? That, you know, we live in such a society that we have so much good and so much going for us. And yet we want to absolutely, you know, just vilify the folks that are largely responsible for making sure that we have these things and access to these things in a safe way, and that we maintain a level of peace and security and prosperity that other countries don't have. And that's one of the things that I find to be so disingenuous about these people that are protesting the police, is that, you know, who are you going to call? You know, when you have an emergency, you dial 911 and you don't get a response. Well, this is one more thing for you to complain about. But keep in mind, you're the ones that want to defund the police. And in many cases, they're not talking about defunding or, you know, or scaling back resources. In many cases, they're talking about complete dismantling. For example, in Minneapolis, and Ilhan Omar, who advocates for the complete dismantling of police departments. That's anarchy. That's not what this country's about. And Americans need to wake up to this, and they need to wake up quickly. Because, and we saw what happened in St. Louis, where, you know, now these people who are defending their home are now being, having the search warrants executed on their home, having their guns seized, because they defended their home against an angry mob. I hope that never comes to Jonesboro, but I hope folks in Jonesboro and Arkansas and across this country wake up to what's going on with this Antifa anarchist type protests that are being waged across this country. And I hope and pray that that never comes to Arkansas, certainly not to the degree that we see in places like, you know, Minneapolis and other parts of the country, New York City, L.A., San Francisco, and others, Seattle, Portland. But my goodness, we have got to wake up to this nonsense.
U.S. Representative Rick Crawford, we have run out of time, but thank you so much for your time today, as we'll be talking to you real soon. Thank you, sir.
You bet. Thank you.
And that's U.S. Representative Rick Crawford joining us here on 91.9 FM KASU.